I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast. You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to A View from the Stands, a podcast series in which we discuss the new normal in the world of sports. I'm Aditya Iyer, and with me is the national sports editor of HD, Rudraneel Sengupta.
Welcome to another episode of A View from the Stands, a very special episode, in fact, today, because it's not every day that you get to interview one of your idols. And my co-host Aditya was taken back to his childhood with this one. Aditya, tell us about the interview. Who did you interview?
Yeah, I honestly don't know how it happened or why I was so blessed, but I basically got to interview The Undertaker. For those who don't know, and I don't think there are too many of those around, he's a WWF, WWE legend. Been in the business for 30 years now. And I actually first got to watch him on a VHS tape when I was 6 years old. He came into the industry when I was five. And today I'm 35. And he's celebrating his 30th year. Yeah, I've never been more nervous during an interview. And I've never felt more rewarded either.
Was it tough though? I mean, was it tough to or did you even try to keep like the child out of the way? Or was it just like, you know, did you just go all fandom on him?
Great question. Yeah, I didn't even try. And, you know, basically like, you know, have a professional outlook about this. I was nervous for two entire days leading up to it. You know, it was a Zoom call. I didn't meet him personally. Right. I was pretty much that six-year-old in front of the VHS tape when, you know, he beat up Papa Shango at SummerSlam 92. I felt the same goosebumps while I spoke to him. He was sitting right in front of him. But the amazing thing was, it wasn't the Undertaker on the other side of the Zoom call, right? It was Mark Calloway, the guy who plays Undertaker. The guy who's basically not broken the Undertaker character for 30 years. And there he was explaining what it took to be the Undertaker and why he never broke kayfabe off the ring. And, you know, explaining all the nuts and bolts of what it took to basically just immortalize this completely outlandish gimmick that he has held for so long in a make-believe industry, right? And it was insane to be a fan and then to also meet the man behind it who's kind of like revealing trade secrets. So, yeah, I mean, like you can hear from my voice right now, I'm gushing and I should possibly stop.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go to the interview, but one quick question before we do that. And you obviously threw a lot of words here that I don't understand. Papa Shango, Survivor Series, kayfabe. They're like, you know, some technical terms that are in a different language. But leaving that aside, what I've heard, The Undertaker does not do interviews. So it must have been really special to get to talk to somebody who has this reputation of not really talking to anyone or revealing himself in any way.
You know, you're spot on there, because for a guy who's kind of transcended his business, you know, he's part of the mainstream in America and all over the world now. And, you know, part of popular culture, like, you know, people who don't care about pro wrestling know who The Undertaker is. For a person like that, it's quite amazing that, like, you know, his business and his trade entailed him not giving interviews. So he would basically go on like a David Letterman show or a Jimmy Fallon show and show up in character and not speak too much because, you know, the Undertaker character doesn't speak. So when I found out that, and I actually found this out during the interview because I didn't know who was going to show up and, you know, who was going to say what, as I established earlier. So when I found out that this was Mark Calloway speaking, I had to very quickly recalibrate my questions and ask him about what it took to play The Undertaker versus how did you pull off the rope walk, or what did it take to, like, you know, be a part of a certain storyline. So it was quite amazing. He just doesn't do interviews, but I think 30 years is a long time now. People get fed up of this business very, very early on. It took Taker, as he's known, 30 whole years to perhaps, like, want to reveal a little bit of what it takes backstage to even wrestle, even to fake wrestle right. all the time, right? So, it was special, man. That's all I can say.
Right. So, without any more delay, let's give it over to The Undertaker putting Aditya 6 feet under.
So, my question to you is, has it been a relief to lift the veil of The Undertaker and finally reveal Mark Calloway? Or has it been hard to break kayfabe after all these years?
Yeah, it's definitely been difficult. Like I've said many times, like, I've lived this life. This character has been part of my real life and everything. So once it took a while to become comfortable talking about things that I've held so closely for so many years. And, you know, even today after the release of the documentary and now the, you know, the celebration of the 30 days of the under, I still sometimes, like, I think about it, like, did I do the right thing? You know, because it's just so, it's ingrained in everything that I've done for so long. So it is, I do catch myself sometimes, like, should I say, it's out there. Go ahead. Let's let it go. So,
yeah, you've been so guarded about the persona, right? I mean, that's a lot of where the authenticity of the character, of the gimmick came from. I just want to ask you, it's a relatively easy question to ask, but sure, the answer is tougher. Did you, in 1990, when you came into what was then the WWF, did you think that this character would be as insanely successful and fresh 30 years later? Because, you know, no. Hunter often says that you could have given it to 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people and it should have been short-lived. Only you could have pulled it off.
Yeah, you can't envision 30 years. And then 30 years at the level that I've been very blessed to perform at, you don't envision that. You always, in this business, because this is your window of opportunity is very short in this business. Our fans change, and their flavor of the week, it changes very rapidly. So you just, it's almost virtually impossible to envision 30 years of that kind of success. And I don't take it for granted. And I'm so appreciative, you know, our fans around the world, our fans in India. I mean, I have such a huge following in India.
Absolutely.
And it's such a blessing for me to know that I have that out there. I mean, in general, I think we have 260 million Indian people watching our product. And,
Every time it goes up on air on either SmackDown or Raw, even more so for the pay-per-views, certainly.
Yeah, it is just, it really is amazing. And, you know, carrying all of our content. But to back to your original question, you just, it's hard to envision 30 years. Now, I knew it started that it was going to be, this is going to be different.
Yep.
And it's going to be special. But to have that kind of longevity, there's no way you see that.
Whose idea was it? Because we know Bruce Pritchard got you in, and, you know, you spoke to Vince between WCW and WWF. But The Undertaker, the Dead Man, was it your idea? Was it Vince's? Was it Bruce's?
I wish I could take credit for it, but it was Vince's brainchild. He had the character. He had the original likeness. He was just waiting for the right guy to come along, and fortunately, the right guy was me. And as soon as it was presented to me, and the backstory of The Undertaker, and I was like, yeah, I can do this. And I really, you know, obviously I sank my teeth into it.
Yep.
And then, you know, I took that gift from Vince and made it my own.
But this took nurturing from both sides, because, you know, back when you came in 1990 during the New Generation, there were so many outlandish characters, but this was the, you know, the one that had the authenticity to kind of go on. You spoke in Stone Cold's show, Broken Skulls, about the Eggman episode. Do you think you dodged a bullet there? Because I don't think it had the legs of Undertaker.
I tell you what, I would have been, if I could have made Eggman last for 30 years, then I really would have accomplished something. I was very nervous and very uptight that whole period of time, because I thought that was going to be me coming out of that egg. And I was never so happy. I was never so happy in my life to hear Vince call me the Undertaker on the phone, because I knew Undertaker wasn't Eggman. And so I was once again, luck shined on me on that day, too. So
what did it take personally? Because, you know, you've seen so many eras, and, you know, you were once the Lord of Darkness, then you moved on to American Badass, did the U-turn, came back to the Undertaker in a non-cartoony way, sort of. And, you know, like wrestlers often say in pro wrestling that changing, you know, your gimmick so often is usually a credibility killer. It's career suicide. But you pulled it off, and how?
Well, so the thing with the character, the character never changed so much, other than the American Badass version.
Right.
Did the character, what it did was evolve. You have to consider all of the content that people around the world are getting, you know, and especially once we went live every Monday night on Raw and then SmackDown. And for, you know, the longest period of time, we were doing both shows, and
that's right.
And then you had pay-per-views, and then you had pay-per-views every month. So there's so much content coming at you. It's just, if you don't keep your character fresh, you know, you're going to lose your fan base, because they're going to get stale. That's why I invested so much time into developing the character. And when I felt like the character needed to move to a different place,
yep,
I retained a lot of the elements of the where I started, but then I just moved them forward, and then I moved them back. And then, you know, there was even, you know, although the American Badass was, you know, the biggest stretch, there was always still that little bit of mystique involved, even with the American Badass, even though I talked, you know, more like everyone else did. But there was always that one thing, like, I think in the back of people's mind, like, don't make him snap, because if he snaps, he could go back, you know, and start digging holes again for people. So, I never really thought of it as changing the character as I did evolving the character to kind of keep up with our fan base.
Yeah, and keeping up the character, because, you know, when I watched that Stone Cold interview, it was a bit like, you know, expecting Batman with that baritone and Bruce Wayne showed up, right? So
right.
How difficult was that? Because, you know, if I may paint you a picture, you've just shot a road show, a show on the road somewhere, and you've been traveling like crazy. You want to drink, but, you know, you have to maintain kayfabe in that bar. Or if you're ordering pizza, did you turn the baritone up for the pizza guy? Like, how hard was this?
You know, it really... You know, once I got into it, it really wasn't that hard, because I was on the road all the time. So I was Undertaker all the time. So it really wasn't that hard. When the guy would come to my room with the pizza, my hotel room, you know, he didn't get this, you know. He got somebody staring at, looking at him, you know. And a lot of times people are like, you know, they can't even talk. And... You know, whereas now, you know, I might be a little bit more engaging, but absolutely. Back then, you know, I give them your money, I take my pizza, I shut the door, and then, you know, there was a lot of times that I could hear them talking to themselves on the other side of the door, trying to convince themselves of who they just saw or what, you know, but it really wasn't difficult because I lived it. I really just lived it everywhere, and obviously, I think that's why. Are one of the huge reasons why it was so successful is because I really never turned it off.
Yeah. It took that kind of maintenance, as we said earlier. I want to quickly ask you about, you know, you've often said that your storyline with Kane, which lasted so long, you were Kane the Undertaker when you first came in. So, you know, as Bearer's son and, you know, the kind of like storyline that you guys created lasted so long. But I want to take you to just one generation before that and your relationship with Rodney, with Yokozuna, right? Because that came at a time when they were throwing all these monsters at you and you were kind of like, you know, really carrying the show on your shoulders against a lot of stiff people. And then right. You got to be with Yoko. So could you just tell me a little bit about that relationship? Because you guys also had something backstage.
Yeah, so obviously, as soon as I saw Yoko, when he came in, when Rodney came in, I begged Vince. I said, please let me work with him first. Let me work with him first. And, you know, Vince's normal way kind of laughed it off and said, oh, you know, in time you'll get a chance to work with him. But, you know, he wanted me to work with Giant Gonzalez first. And
WrestleMania 9.
Oh, yeah. And
lead up to it.
And then Lex got to work with Yoko. And, you know, we both, you know, we formed this friendship. And then finally, we got the green light that we were going to work an angle together. And, you know, Rodney was that guy that you would look at him, and then you could not believe how physically gifted he was, how athletic he was for the size that he was.
Absolutely.
And then with his Samoan, you know, his whole Samoan heritage and legacy, they come out of the womb knowing how to wrestle. I mean, so he understood. You know, he understood the business, and they had all these physical gifts, and it was somebody that I was able to sell for, and somebody that, you know, that I could actually get a little bit of sympathy from the crowd, because everyone looked at me as this killer, and no one, you know, really believed that anybody could hurt me until Yoko come along.
That's
and
right.
Then it was like, oh, okay, that guy can. You know, that guy can actually do some damage to the Undertaker. And I always look back fondly, more so of our friendship, but even the time that we got to spend together in the ring, was very special. But my friendship with Yoko was, it was just incredible. I miss him every day. You know, he was just a joy to be around.
This is my last question. We're running out of time. So, you know, you were on top of the heap as soon as you came in. You're still on top of the heap. Can you just explain what kind of work this takes? Because, you know, the eternal character that you've created in The Undertaker doesn't age, but Mark Calloway does. So, you know, I do know that the preparations get longer, but what's the toll that it takes on your body?
So, I mean, you know, I mean, I could complain about it, but I mean, obviously I've had 17, 18 surgeries to repair different, you know, wrestling related injuries. You know, there's not a day goes by now that I don't wake up that I'm in some sort of pain. And I don't say that for sympathy, because I'm not looking for sympathy. I wouldn't change a thing. You know, I wouldn't change a thing in my career, even knowing how, you know, where I'm at physically now. I wouldn't change it because I loved it. And I knew you know what you're getting into. You know, it's not an easy life.
Yeah.
And it's very physically demanding, but it is what it is, and it takes its toll. It takes a lot longer now. I have to do, you know, 10 times as much work to get ready for a match for half the results than what it used to. I mean, that's just the way it is. But the process, I still enjoy. I enjoy seeing where I can take my body at this point in my career, and with all the injuries and all the things that I have to train around. You know, those are things I look at as personal challenges, and it is what it is. It's just part of the game, and you accept it or you get out of it.
I speak for an entire generation of Indians when I say thank you. And, you know, it's really been an honor to do this.
Well, hey, it's my honor, because like I said, I don't get this opportunity often enough to reach out to my Indian fans. And I just want to thank you, all the fans of India. I appreciate you guys so much. I was being so loyal for so long, even when, you know, you get a different flavor every week. You know, my fan base has been there, and it's not lost on me. And I'm very humbled I'm very humbled by the outcry and the support of India.
So that's it for this edition of A View from the Stands. We really hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. If you're a WWE fan, surely you did. To show your love and to keep us going, tweet it, share it, and until next time.
This was an episode of A View from the Stands. Do like and follow us on at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or write to us on podcasts@hindustantimes.com. You can listen to more podcasts by logging on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.